I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Maryland legislators have wrapped up their work in Annapolis. Governor Larry Hogan called it by far our best legislation session ever in 7 years. Today on Midday, a legislation conversation. From police reform to pandemic relief, school funding, sports betting, and the state song, lawmakers bolted out of the gate early in the session and continued a hectic pace right through sine die yesterday. Republican Minority Leader Senator Brian Simonaire, Washington Post political reporter Ovita Wiggins, and WYPR State House reporter Rachel Bay join me with a recap. Plus, Dr. Lena Wen explains why the CDC and the FDA are suggesting a pause in the use of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine. First, the news. And good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Unrest and violence continued for a second night as a large crowd ignored a curfew and clashed with police in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. This follows the murder of a 20-year-old African-American man, Dante Wright, at the hands of a white police officer, Kim Potter, following a traffic stop on Sunday afternoon. Brooklyn Center Police Chief Tim Gannon told reporters yesterday that Officer Potter accidentally drew her handgun instead of her taser gun and fired once, killing Mr. Wright. Minnesota Public Radio reports that the city council has called for both Gannon and Potter to be fired. Others have called for the city manager to also be fired. Some 10 miles away in Minneapolis, prosecutors rested their case today in the murder and manslaughter trial of former police officer Derek Chauvin. And the coronavirus vaccine developed by Johnson & Johnson has been put on hold following 6 cases of blood clots that may be related to the vaccine. Coming up in just a little bit, Dr. Lena Wen will join me here on Midday to explain why the FDA and the CDC have recommended pausing the use of the J&J drug, a recommendation that the state of Maryland and the city of Baltimore have announced that they will implement until further information about the potential risk of the vaccine is determined. And last night, the Maryland General Assembly finished the work of the 2021 session, a session unlike any other given the pandemic's effect on how business was conducted and, in several respects, what business was conducted. We begin today with a look back at the 2021 session. A little later, Ovita Wiggins, who covers the State House for the Washington Post, and Rachel Bay, WYPR's State House reporter, will join me with a recap of some of the highlights of the 2021 session. But first, we turn to Senator Brian Simonaire, the Republican minority leader in the upper chamber. He represents Northeast Anne Arundel County, and he joins us on Zoom. Senator, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So yesterday, Governor Hogan called this the best session ever in 7 years. Nick Kipke, who is your counterpart in the House, the minority leader there, called it the worst session in 15 years. That's quite an expanse on the spectrum there of satisfaction with this session. Where do you stand in that spectrum?
Well, I think it's all in the eye of the beholder. I respect both the Governor Hogan and Delegate Kipke. Matter of fact, Delegate Kipke is my delegate from my district. It's the first time in history where we've had the minority leaders from the same district. So that was an interesting point to this session. I would say it's somewhere in between. We started out very positive. We worked with the governor on the COVID relief package. The Democrats came along, supported that. And it was a very good sense of working together, and that's how government should work. From there, it quickly went downhill. We started to go into the veto overrides. And, you know, it was amazing that we were debating whether we should raise $250 million in new taxes during a pandemic. And I think that just set the tone for the rest of the session. The Republican side, who usually doesn't like to have taxes raised, period, we think we should have government more efficient. But to raise $250 million in new taxes in the middle of a pandemic was just unbelievable to us.
And given the federal government's role in the budget moving forward for next year and even some years after that, What's your comfort level about the fiscal status of the state, given the fact that the American Rescue Plan does have money for states and even local municipalities?
Yeah, it certainly helped. There's no doubt about that. We came in with a structural deficit, which basically means that in the out years, we weren't going to have enough money to continue the spending that we had. After the federal government supplied the money, took care of those structural deficits. The thing we have to be careful about is this is a 1 year or 2 year influx of money. And we can't rely on that, because if you rely on it, then the federal money is going to disappear and then they're going to come back to the taxpayer asking them to pay that. And we had just this year, they overrode the Kerwin bill, which is the educational plan for the next 10 years. And that's raising about $40 billion in new revenues. And so they're raising money here in the state for that. They also have mandated on the locals that they have to raise about $1 billion each year. So now the locals are going to have to start raising taxes as well. And again, in the Kerwin situation, there was nothing written into the law that would ensure that we would get what we were promised. 10 years ago, we had the same promise with the Thornton Commission, and then they just reevaluated it and said it was basically a failure. They didn't do it, but they're going to get it right this time. We as Republicans asked and tried to get amendments in the bill to define what success looks like, what student performance looks like, reducing the achievement gap. They would not put any quantitative results in the bill, which gives us great pause when you're spending $40 billion.
Senator Brian Simonair is the Republican minority leader in the Maryland Senate. I'm Tom Hall. It's midday. We're taking a look back at the 2021 session of the Maryland General Assembly, which finished last night with sine die at midnight. So, Senator, what about the mechanics of how you all met this session? Because of the pandemic, you had those plastic shields on the floor of the Senate. The House met in two separate groups so that neither group was too big. And it seemed that the pace of consideration of legislation was really quick. I mean, it came out of the gate quickly, right from the very first days of the session. There's often a sort of, you know, slow kind of warm-up in the first few weeks as committees consider legislation, and then things gradually get to the floor. It just seemed to a lot of observers this time around that the pace was considerably more quick. How did you personally feel about the mechanics of how you all met, and do you think it influenced, you know, the tone and the results of the session this year?
Yeah, I mean, typically it's like a roller coaster ride. You know, you start off slow, you go up the hill, and then you start flying, and then it just stops with an abrupt stop on the last day of session at midnight. You're correct in your assessment. Starting day two, we were immersed in public hearings. I do commend the Senate president. He worked with the minority party to come up with protocols. And a lot of people didn't think we were going to be able to go 90 days. And through the protocols that they set up, we were able to get it. I'm glad I'm not getting the COVID test anymore. During the 13 weeks, I got 52 tests up my nose. Wasn't the most comfortable thing, but it was necessary, so we did it. And so we got to the finish line. As far as the process goes, I was really concerned about the transparency. We didn't allow the constituency to come down and testify in person. The state house was basically closed to them. And then we also limited debate as far as how many people could testify on the bill, because if you're doing it virtually, you know, obviously you could have 10,000 people sign up. So I think the product suffered some because of that. And we had to rely more on reading emails and texts coming in. And time is the greatest resource down here. And we only have so much time because we're in public hearings, we go on the floor, and then to try to go back and read some of these comments that people are giving us with the concerns of legislation, it just was a hard process to do. Another thing that was, we didn't expect this, but it came out, was the communication between senators. Even on the floor, you had the plexiglass there, you know, we're doing sign waving to try to figure out what the person wants. Normally, we have access to legal counsel through our seatmate, and they'll call somebody down in the office. We didn't have that. So often on the floor, we would get answers that weren't correct, not intentionally. But, you know, that hurts the process.
One of the subcommittees that you chair is the subcommittee on alcohol and distribution of that. The COVID bill, or the COVID relief bill to small businesses, does continue the off-premises permission to sell, basically to have carry out alcohol the way you can have carry out meals. I would assume that you would think that that was a very positive development. Anything else in the COVID relief bill to the small business community that you're happy about, and things that you may be not so happy about?
Yeah, well, the big COVID package was targeted help for those who needed it from the pandemic, whether it was businesses or individuals. So that was $1.2 billion of targeted resources for them. So that was huge. We thank the governor for that. You mentioned the carry out and also delivery for restaurants. What we did is extended the executive order, so it goes for 2 more years. Each jurisdiction can opt in if they want to participate. If they don't want to participate in that, they don't have to. We're going to sunset it, and we actually have a study built into that to see the impacts of how that has helped or hurt the communities with that. We also did a similar thing for the breweries, so they can still do delivery. That has a 1-year sunset. The telehealth is another big issue, especially when people can't get out of their houses during the pandemic. And we made sure that they would get reimbursed by the insurance companies for their telehealth services that they would normally get in the office. So there was just a wide range of issues that we dealt with. I think one thing in the COVID pandemic was the lack of access to broadband. Certain communities had it, certain communities didn't. So with the governor, federal funds, we put together a package over $300 million to help that, to expand it, to make sure people had access to it, because it touches every area of life, whether you're working, trying to telework, or whether you're in education and your children were virtually learning. So that was a huge win, I believe, for Marylanders. Again, there were wins and there was losses. You know, obviously I said the tax increase was a loss, but I think what you're seeing is the Senate is shifting much more to the left. And we, as the Republicans, believe it or not, think we are trying to moderate and bring the Senate back to the middle. Just this year, they spent, I think, almost $800 million for those unlawfully in our country to give them taxpayer resources. They also set up a department for immigration to help those who are here unlawfully. You know, it's just one issue after the other. And if I can bring up election, we believe in greater access, but we believe it has to be paired with the associated safeguards. And we're trying to have a balance here in the Senate. And the leadership, they had the vote, so they just rammed through greater access of voting, but didn't put in the necessary safeguards that so many other states have. So that was disappointing. I think the people of Maryland lost in that area.
Well, let me ask you about a couple of those things. When it comes to undocumented immigrants receiving state benefits, these are people who are paying taxes. They don't have Social Security numbers, but they are paying taxes through what's called an employment identification number. Do you see it as a fairness issue just because they don't have a Social Security number? I mean, they are taxpayers. How do you fault that legislation?
Sure. And I've had the privilege of traveling all over the world through my career as an engineer. And I can tell you, when I go into another country, if I break their laws, they don't come in and start giving me money. They would throw me in jail or throw me out of the country. So, you know, we have laws. If we want to change the laws at the federal level, that should be a debate. But while, you know, at the core of a legislator is making laws, so we need to abide by the laws. But as far as paying taxes, many people, especially those lower income, they submit a tax return. That doesn't mean they're paying taxes. Generally, what happens is they get a refund of all the taxes they paid. But in addition to that, they get a credit where they get extra money coming from the state of Maryland to give them. So you have to look at their income levels And so just because you submit a tax form does not mean you're actually paying taxes. And that I think the majority of them fit into that category. And recently, it's just, you know, when you talk about a matter of fairness, we opened up our community colleges through the Promise program to give full ride through our community colleges. And what we said is it's need-based. And they pushed through legislation that gives undocumented immigrants preference over citizens simply based on their income level. I don't think that's fair. Most people don't think that's fair when you have single parents trying to raise their kids and working two or three jobs to get them through college. And then when you have somebody come here illegally and we give taxpayer dollars and say, we're going to make you a priority over our citizens, we have something wrong with our laws on the book.
All right. I may be wrong. Correct me if I am, but I think that's legislation that was passed some time ago. That's not something that happened in this particular session. Is that right?
Right. I think that was 2 years ago, but it's the culmination of all these things. You know, you start doing that. Now we're this year, you pass a Department of Immigration, which is extra money from taxpayers. And it's set up. Remember, immigration issues are federal issues, but we're setting that up here to actually help those who have come in our country illegally through taxpayer dollars to help them. You know, I just have a philosophical problem with that. I think if we're going to deal with the issue, it should be a federal issue and let them fix it. But until then, we should have been.
We just have a minute or so left. The governor did release a statement yesterday lauding the fact that money was put into the rainy day fund. And he says a lot of good progress was made and that we are in a much stronger financial shape now than we've ever been as a state. So he doesn't seem particularly worried about the fiscal condition of the state. What do you think? You mentioned that you think the Senate is definitely leaning left. As Governor Hogan next year leaves the state stage and perhaps enters the national stage, there's a lot of speculation that he will run for president. Where does that leave the Republican Party here in Maryland when Larry Hogan, a very popular governor among Democrats and Republicans, is no longer the chief cook and bottle washer?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think Maryland is a moderate state and they're looking for moderation. And, you know, part of the reason Governor Hogan got into office is because we taxed the rain and people were just tired of it. But then he got on his own agenda and started showing moderation, fiscal conservative, but still spending responsibly. You know, the federal government has really helped us now with the budget. But don't forget, that's not free money. Somebody's going to have to pay that money back at the federal level. And, you know, you can continue to spend, but at the end of the day, somebody's going to pay that. And we'll have other great candidates running for governor. And I think the message will be, we want moderation in Maryland. We don't want the extremes. And what we're seeing is a much younger legislature that is going further and further to the left. And I don't think that's in line with what average Marylander wants in Maryland.
All right, Senator Brian Simonaire, he's the Republican Minority Leader in the Maryland Senate. Senator, thank you for your perspective. I very much appreciate it.
All right, thank you so much.
Coming up, Dr. Lena Wen joins me to talk about this morning's announcement by the FDA and the CDC to pause use of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine. Dr. Wen joins me after a quick break. You're listening to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.